But there is no sense that he had a knife in his hand. One of the witnesses told me that what he picked up for a moment, thinking that he trying to comply, was a cake spatula.
A cake spatula?
Yes, and with a, and that's what she, one of the witnesses told me that that's what he picked up, kind of trying to show to comply with police
orders. We have 10 seconds. How are you organizing?
Oh, we are by now several coalitions: the Justice for Alex Nieto Coalition, Justice for Amílcar Pérez López, and also Mario Woods, who have been asking for a federal investigation.
We're going to continue this conversation and post it at democracynow.org. Thank you both so much for being with us, Adriana Camarena and Rebecca Solnit. And we'll link to your piece, Death by Gentrification. We're on the road here in San Francisco. We're speaking at Stanford University tonight, this afternoon at 3:30, and tonight at Santa Clara Convention Center Theater. Happy birthday, Anna Osbeck. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our host, Joe Uris. Today's guest is local journalist Paul Koberstein of Cascadia Times and the Portland Tribune. We'll talk about the protests targeting precision cast parts and the dangerous chemicals being released by urban industry.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Inner City Blues Festival's Healing the Healthcare Blues on Saturday, April 16th from 6 p.m. to midnight at the North Portland Eagles Lodge in Portland. The campaign for universal healthcare for every citizen is growing around the United States. Our local organization, Healthcare for All Oregon, has brought the movement to the stage for an outreach and fundraising mega concert featuring Vicki Stevens and the True Blue Lady Cat, Rosalind Hunters with LaRonda Steele, Terry Robb, Norman Sylvester Band, and many more. KBOO will be broadcasting live from the event. Again, that's Healing the Healthcare Blues on Saturday, April 16th from 6 p.m. to midnight at the North Portland Eagles Lodge, 7611 North Exeter Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio, along with Street Roots Newspaper, is proud to co-sponsor Amy Goodman's Portland appearance Sunday, May 8th, at the Aladdin Theater. She'll be talking about Democracy Now!, 20 years covering the movements changing America. Her new book, co-authored by David Goodman and Dennis Moynihan. And Amy will be doing a book signing after the talk. All proceeds go to benefit KBOO and Street Roots Newspaper. Again, that's Amy Goodman on Sunday, May 8th at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/democracynowbenefit. Democracy is coming to the
USA. Time was when an American about to go abroad would be warned by his friends or the guidebooks not to drink the water. But times have changed, and now a foreigner coming to this country might be offered the following advice.
If you visit American City, you will find it very pretty. Just two things of which you must beware. Don't drink the water and don't breathe the air. Pollution, pollution, they got smog and sewage and mud. Turn on your tap. Get hot and cold running crud. See the halibuts and the sturgeons being wiped out by detergents. Fish gotta swim and birds gotta fly, but they don't last long if they try. Pollution, pollution, you can use the latest toothpaste and then rinse your mouth with industrial waste.
Tom Lear. Hey, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe ain't here. This is me, Joe Uris. The number to call, 231-8187. I want to warn people that we have a guest, and that's not the warning, but because we have a guest and the issue is so important, which is pollution here in Portland, toxic, really serious toxic emissions, we'll probably limit the number of callers. Don't be resentful. Don't be angry. Don't hang up. Don't go away. Stick around. You'll learn a lot and probably scare the hell out of you, I think. So Paul Gorenstein is a person who has done an enormous amount of investigative journalism, worked for the Oregonian until they decided to disappear, and has been a very important figure in uncovering disgusting, truly disgusting behaviors by large corporate interests in the region. It's not just Bullseye Glass, which is a small but significant polluter. It's much larger than that. We're going to focus on companies like Precision Cast Parts, which, by the way, is now part of the family of the good guy capitalists. I laugh. Warren Buffett bought it, this January, I think.
January, and they paid $32.4 billion. $32.4 billion?
Yeah, that's the kind of money I make every billion. Day. It's a mere bagatelle. But the fact of the matter is that Precision does an enormous amount of work, some of it's secret, developing and building parts for weapon systems and for jet planes.
Sure, they're a defense contractor.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of secrecy involved in what they do.
And, of course, they are a beloved firm in the region, giving Portland credibility as a major industrial company.
Yeah, they call themselves a Fortune 500 company. Oregon's number two behind, I guess, Nike.
Behind Nike. So what I got attracted to the stuff you did because, and I want to do a little shout out here. The Portland Tribune, among others, has really covered this stuff. And this is ironic because the Tribune, after all, is owned by a very conservative guy who's starting his own, what I think will eventually be a daily paper if he has his way, I suspect. You know, he's bought all these little neighborhood papers. All of them carry usually the same sets of stories as front page stories. And it's an exciting endeavor. It's hard to get hard physical papers these days, but I think he's making a go of it.
I'm impressed that Tribune is doing serious journalism.
Much more so than the Oregonian, sadly to say. We're not going to spend time on the disappearance of print journalism. We are going to spend time on the pollution story, and I'm going to ask you, Paul Culverstein, to talk about what you discovered when you investigated the issue of pollution from major firms. For example, Precision Cast Parts.
Well, let me start with the beginning of the story. I got a call from someone in the neighborhood there in Southeast Portland inquiring about this company, Precision Cast Parts. And, you know, they have been around for 50, 60 years doing who knows what, making, as they say, parts for jet airplanes. They claim that there isn't a plane up in the sky that doesn't include some kind of alloy from this company. So I filed some Freedom of Information requests with the state Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, actually four of them, and it took a couple of years actually to get all the documents I wanted. Then I filed one with the city of Portland. And the paper trail led me to understand that this company has been an air polluter for who knows how long, but also a water polluter. And then—
Wait a minute, water polluter?
Water polluter. And then on top of that, they have checkered record of handling hazardous waste. And they've had a couple of explosions.
I remember one explosion, in 11?
They had one in 2011 and another one in 2013. And people still talk about the orange fireballs in the sky, and there was some confusion. They were supposed to notify the neighborhood of these accidents, and apparently not everybody was told. The ones who were told to say, stay inside. But word didn't get to everyone that should have gone to.
But when they have an explosion, what goes up comes down onto the soil where a lot of people garden, grow their own vegetables and so on. So this stuff ends up in the ground or in the water, right?
And I have heard, and there were some press reports, not in the Oregonian or anywhere else, but I think one of the local newspapers of a grass fire that was torched by this accident. And I don't know the facts or the details of that, but it seems plausible.
So there are two things that I hope we have time to talk about. I want to warn people. I know a lot of you like to call in, and I certainly appreciate that. This is supposed to be a talk show. But because we have a guest and because I think this issue is so important to the health of the environment and our human health, I'm going to limit those calls. So don't get angry at me. This is a one-time thing. Paul knows this stuff. I know very little of it. My only experience has been goes back quite a while to the question of the effectiveness of the DEQ, which we hopefully we'll get to. So briefly, what did you discover specifically about water pollution and the behavior of precision cast parts?
Well, as far as water pollution, they had a sewer line underneath the plant that they used as sort of as their dump, their dumping ground. It's a city of Portland sewer line, storm sewer, that emptied into Johnson Creek. Mm-hmm. And they had been dumping all kinds of stuff into that sewer line. Toxic PCBs, hexavalent chromium, you may have heard of that. It's a very, very carcinogenic compound. Sulfur, nickel, zinc. It's a long list of maybe 24 different chemicals they put in there. And the city found a 20-ton blob of goo, gelatinous.
Wait a minute, 20-ton blob of goo?
Well, actually 20.5 tons.
Okay.
20.5 tons, not pounds, not ounces, but tons. Mm-hmm. It's a lot.
Yeah.
In the sewer that they had put there for who knows how long. They had been out there doing stuff at this site since 1957. Before that, it was a celery orchard or farm or whatever they did. I'm not sure what they did. Who grows celery?
Celery?
Plant? Yeah, the plant.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's what was there before they came along. Mm-hmm. And then they have been doing whatever they do ever since. The city found this 20-ton glob of pollution under the plant in the city's sewer line that was getting into Johnson Creek, putting PCBs and carcinogenic metals into Johnson Creek, into an area, by the way, that's a park. It's called Tideman Johnson Natural Area. Mm-hmm. And Johnson Creek flows right through there. The Springwater Trail, a very popular hiking, bicycling area that goes from Portland to Boring, goes right through there. There's a lot of playground, play area, people, kids swim in the creek right there. So Johnson Creek is the receptacle at that point of this company's water pollution, of these metals, PCBs, carcinogens, and there is no notice, no sign posted by anybody warning people of what is going on there.
Wow.
And some people say, well, why is that? Well, that's a really good question. The city of Portland knew, the Department of Environmental Quality knew, and they didn't tell anybody. Why didn't they tell anybody? Why didn't they issue a press release or have a public hearing on the pollution or take comments on the cleanup plan or take comments on the fine? There was a fine.
Very low fine, as I
recall. A parking ticket. $1,000, that's all, for dumping toxic waste into a creek. There could be another fine. There could be some more action, legal action against this company. But we'll see. By the DEQ for pollution.
So, you know, this is a horror story, which I've seen repeated and repeated. The first time it broke recently was over the question of poisonous chemicals being released into the air around a very kind of popular outfit like Bullseye Glass, which makes beautiful stained glass. And it was an issue. I mean, I have friends in the arts community who say, "Oh, but Bullseye's so wonderful. Bullseye's so wonderful." Well, it turns out from what you're saying that this is the Bullseye's behavior, and I can't remember the name of the other company.
Ouroboros.
Yeah. That it turns out that they are a tip of an iceberg, that we are really looking at a vast tendency because of the tolerance of both the city of Portland and the state, as far as, and the federal government, to allow incredible degrees of pollution. And the irony of Johnson Creek, aside from the fact that it's unmarked and the stuff pours out there, is there's a plan to revitalize Johnson Creek to restore the salmon, to make it a healthier thing. And that is all, I think, thrown into question when these enormously toxic chemicals are poured directly into it, not to mention the stuff in the air.
That's correct. There's been a plan to restore coho and steelhead, maybe some other species mm-hmm. of salmon, into that creek. They found at least two fairly small but significant fish gills. About 40 fish were found dead mm-hmm. in this toxic goo. They call it a gelatinous goo. Think jello. Think toxic jello.
Toxic jello. Yum, yum. Okay, sorry. Yeah, no, this is a very, very important story. You know, again, I have to praise the Portland Tribune and the work you're doing, because it's a lot of other papers picked up on it, but small papers. But it's the kind of thing that I think is worthy of Pulitzer attention, because this is really something that probably takes place in almost every state in the United States, where essentially city and state agencies are either asleep at the wheel or in a conflicted position where their task is to promote business, because business makes jobs and jobs make taxes and so on. And here we are in this situation where agencies find themselves saying, oh, it's okay, don't worry. No, your hand melted? Well, you know, it's just a few hands. I'm exaggerating, but my point is that we're not, as a culture, paying attention to a local potential toxic disaster.
A little anecdote from this story. When the city of Portland discovered this problem, they went to the company and said, we've found this violation. What are you going to do about it? The company's initial reaction was deny. They blamed a wetland that's located across the street.
Mm.
And they said this toxic stuff was coming from the wetland, from a basically a duck pond.
Well, you know ducks.
Ducks, cattails, who knows, whatever wetland plants were polluting, were menacing. It's cattails with guns, basically. But so they blamed the wetland. And the city of Portland says, well, I don't think so. The toxic chemicals in the creek are the same ones that are being used in your factory, and we don't think that cattails make PCBs.
So this is a very disturbing, and I'm afraid, given my politics, not surprising story. But what I want to know right now is what happened to the toxic gob of you know what?
Okay, so they went through in 2015 and scooped it all out. They took some big spoon and scooped it out and put it into a dumpster and shipped it off to a garbage dump in Hillsborough. And then,
wait a minute, it's sitting in a garbage dump in Hillsborough?
20 tons of it is sitting at the garbage dump in Hillsborough. They filled three barrels of stuff, and the most toxic stuff was sent off to a hazardous waste landfill in Idaho.
So what we're really doing, at best, is getting it the hell out of our region and dumping it in places that are now considered to be okay to dump this horrible stuff.
And I should also add, some of this material was radioactive. There's three isotopes of a radioactive metal called thorium that was in there.
Oh, yes, thorium. So what we're talking about, and I want to be very clear about the precision gas parts, is dumping, essentially, not only toxic metals that are in and of themselves carcinogenic, but beyond that, we're talking about things that are also radioactively toxic. So I find the whole thing kind of not surprising, I'm sad to say, but very important. And I think people are far too, there's this kind of mythic pride in the Portland metro area that we are environmentally conscious and we're really cool and everybody's on a bicycle. They're on a bicycle breathing toxins. It seems to me that the DEQ, the various agencies that should be guarding us, are in a conflict between the desire of the state to have these corporations where people have good paying jobs and the fact that there's real serious toxic invasion going on.
I think that mentioning the DEQ in this context is really, really key because they have been basically asleep at the wheel for decades. The industrial pollution that goes into our air in our city is enormous. The city is, the airshed is 49 different carcinogens from industry that have been dumped into the air that are
49
that are causing an elevated cancer risk for everybody in the city. This entire airshed is contaminated.
All right, I'm buying some lead underwear. That's it, you know. Bad joke, but you know.
I think the underwear would help, but I think if you worry about breathing, you might need some other kind of gas
lead
mask.
Lead gas mask. Well, I think this is really I'm joking, but it's really a very, very serious issue. It's been downplayed, underplayed, or denied for years. And I go back to a discovery my partner and I made that there was a plan to put a PCB burner to burn off PCBs in old transformers for Portland General Electric right on the Columbia Slough. And we organized a great deal of attention and protest. And what we discovered is the DEQ really was no help at all. They were not at all interested in stopping this project, as far as we could tell. It ended up being something that was stopped by a very alert city employee who discovered that the plant couldn't be built at that site, which was right next to a PGE thing, because it violated some watershed rules. So, you know, essentially, the DEQ was indifferent, despite the fact that there were literally hundreds of people angry and appearing at hearings. They weren't even, at one point we discovered while they were holding hearings, they were just letting us vent. They weren't recording the material. They weren't actually taking those recordings, what little recordings were there, and turning them into documents. It was a ritual.
Around that time, around 2000, the DEQ put out this press release that blamed the toxic air problem in Portland on hairspray.
Hairspray?
People were using hairspray. It was releasing it.
Is this a John Waters joke? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
It was the hairspray would release aerosols into the air that would cause pollution. And maybe there was some pollution from that, but they did not want to talk about some of the major industrial sources of pollution at that time. For example, ESCO. They were putting all kinds of stuff into the air.
We actually, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, we have a person who, I don't know if he's still around, who wants to talk about his own role in this polluting chemical thing. Do we have him on? Is he available? Yeah, a guy named Matt. Matt, are
you? Yeah, that's me.
Okay, what's up, Matt?
Well, I heard this story a couple days ago or a few days ago, and I remember as a kid, this is like in the, I don't know, mid to late 70s or so. It's been quite a while. But there was a program for, it was called the, Urban Indian Center.
Oh, yes.
And they had a day labor program, and they actually hired us at Precision Cast Parts I don't know what other guys did, but they had us pouring that stuff down that drain you're talking about.
So you were actually one of the people pouring the toxins into the regular sewer line.
Right. They had some kind of like little outhouse thing where the drain was, and they had these big barrels that we were supposed to dump down there.
Interesting.
Yeah, this is news to both of us, so continue on, Matt.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you guys already know about it.
Well, we know about it in general, but you're able to give us information very specifically about the process that took place out of Precision Cast Parts. And in fact, what you're saying essentially argues that Precision Cast Parts not only knew about it, but was using people, day laborers, who would not have a tremendous education about pollution.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know what.
In fact, using a minority contractor.
Well, not only that, but Native Americans. I mean, come on. Ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah, there was some kind of meter thing on there, you know, and they said don't worry about it. and you know, just listening to this and remembering back then, you know, I mean, I was a young kid. Mm-hmm. I was probably in my early 20s, you know, mm-hmm. And I'm almost 60, so this is a long time ago.
Right.
But I still remember that, you know, because it was just an odd thing, you know, to do, is pour these barrels down this drain.
Really? I think it's very interesting. You really contribute an element to this that I wouldn't expect.
I think that helps us understand why there was 20 tons of this crap. Can I say that word?
Yeah, can say
that. In that sewer.
Yeah, no, I actually think this is amazing. And I think that the aspect that Matt, are bringing up, where essentially persons of color, minority people, are being exploited for their labor to do this process, which is a way for precision cast parts to keep some distance, even as it's involved in this.
Correct. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, too. I mean, you're really not going to have a record of, you know, day laborers, you know, at precision cast parts.
Well,
they kind of have a separator, you know, of them not doing it, but, you know, someone else taking care of it for them.
Right. And one of the ironies here, from my point of view, Warren Buffett is considered a good capitalist. You know, he's the model capitalist. And he just bought with his company, his huge holding company, Precision Cast Parts for several billion dollars. And here is growing evidence of Precision Cast Parts apparently knowingly dumping these toxins.
You know, he bought more than just the company. He bought their mess. And, you know, Warren Buffett is pretty deep pockets. I think there might be a lawyer or two out there that might notice that and put these things together and maybe file some kind of action.
You think?
I'm guessing.
Let's hope.
I have no...
Let's hope.
No inside information on that.
Anyway, Matt, I want to thank you for that information. It's very useful. It gives us a perspective that maybe we don't have from Paul and I.
Well, no, thank you. I just, you know, it's been on my mind. Like I said, you know, I heard about this a few days ago, and I want to thank the journalists who are bringing it out.
Yeah, and Paul is one of those. I want to give a shout out to the Portland Tribune, which is turning into an actual newspaper of all things.
Nice.
Hey, thanks for the thanks for the call, man.
Thank you,
Paul. You need to hang up so we can continue.
I will.
Hang on. No, we want you to hang on. Wait, I guess. What? No, I blew it. Okay, never mind.
Oops.
Don't worry about it. So, Paul, I mean, you followed this for a while, right?
This I did. Story. Yes.
And really developed it. I think that Portland is like a naive child. It is wanting to have all these good things, and wanting to have a healthy economy. And all of us, when we start studying this stuff, discover that there's a price for this, particularly in an underregulated, I won't say unregulated, but an underregulated environment like Oregon, where I think everything is very naive at best and perhaps corrupt at worst. And I wonder how the public can be made more aware. This is why your story is so valuable. But how we can force this to the attention of Governor Brown and others, because obviously nobody's been minding the store.
I think, you know, Portlanders think that their city is clean and sustainable, and that's an idea that's reinforced by the media. The environmental magazine Grist.org, a few years ago ranked Portland as the number two sustainable city in the world behind Reykjavik, Iceland.
Ah.
And so, but they didn't have any idea what was in our air and what these companies were doing to our water, and that just... was not part of the equation.
Well, and then when you read the stories or follow the stories in other sources, there's always this reassurance. Recently, the examination by the state and the EPA says, well, there's nothing really significant on the ground coming out of these polluting sources. Don't worry. But when you're raising young children, when you're an expectant parent, you should be worried. You should be angry, and you should be active.
And I think that's the case. I'm so impressed with the number of people who are rallying to this cause in the East Side in Southeast Portland. The East Side Portland Air Pollution Group has, in just 1 month, gathered 3,300 members. The South Portland has 500. I've never seen in all my years of covering these kinds of things so much activity and so much rallying for this for a cause.
You're listening
to this degree.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe ain't here. It's me, Joe Uris, with Paul Kupferstein. We're talking about pollution, but specifically paying attention to precision cast parts' role in all of this. But there are many other pollution sources that need to be considered. The story began with a discussion of a small art glass firm and has expanded and expanded and expanded. And this is maybe, perhaps, the tip of the iceberg. I know that the Willamette River during the war and afterward, and, of course, the Columbia River with radioactive material out of Hanford, all of these places are seriously polluted. All of them are being reassured by agencies that it's all cool. It don't seem so cool to me. And I really become quite concerned. Remember that these pollutants, while not good for anybody, are really, really dangerous to developing fetuses and to developing young children.
That's correct. And there are so many hot spots around the city that are posing a threat to children. We mentioned the glass companies. There's a truck manufacturer on Swan Island, Daimler. Their fumes are polluting the air of North Portland. There's
now that's Daimler-Benz. That's the Mercedes-Benz company. It's an international manufacturer.
There's a place out in Coley, another place in the Rose City Park area that have caused pollution of the air. Precision cast parts. EPA released some data that shows the cancer risk for people in that area is significantly higher than the surrounding neighborhood.
This is so, it's so disturbing. And what's most concerning for me is the fact that the agency that's supposed to guard our air locally, the Environmental Protection Agency and DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality of the state of Oregon, seem to be in denial. And I wonder, is that true? And why? Why?
Well, you look at the DEQ's budget over the years, it's been cut back, and staffing levels have been reduced again and again and again in Salem. Mm-hmm. And the lobbying force behind this is not the environmentalists, it's industry. AOI, Associated Oregon Industries, has been mounting a decades-long effort to cripple this agency and reduce its pollution regulation for profit.
I have to say, given my politics, this doesn't surprise me, but the specifics are quite amazing, and the fact that it's so apparently so easy to have happen. And most of us, and I have to say, I wouldn't have been clear on this at all if it hadn't been for the work you did. This is a thing that has been going on forever, and we're always reassured. Now, during World War II, of course, a lot of pollution, a lot of environmental pollution went into the Willamette River. Now, there's a discussion of cleaning up the river, but what they mainly seem to want to do is cover over, literally, physically cover over the pollution at the bottom of the river. Hanford has been pouring radioactive gunk into the river for a long, long time. In fact, the Columbia River, many sources say, is the most radioactive river in the United States. This is a pattern. This is scary. This is something that will affect, not may affect, will affect the health, the lives, the longevity of people all along the river system and along the watersheds, in the watershed, including Portland.
You mentioned the city of Portland, the Portland Harbor, which is a Superfund site. And it is a collection of all kinds of toxic chemicals that have been dumped into the river for who knows how long. One aspect of this story is that Precision Cast Parts is actually located upstream from that site. And if any of these toxics have gotten into the harbor from Precision Castparts pollution, that company could be liable for cleanup costs in the harbor.
Really?
Under federal law.
Well, that's interesting.
But that is an if. They have not yet found any evidence of that.
Well, that's good. And, of course, once President Trump gets his hands on the government, we won't need to worry about it ever.
Well, he's saying he's going to get rid of the Department of Environmental Protection, whatever that is.
Right, right. We're in a very odd place politically in this country at this time. It isn't simply the arguments that I would make about capitalism and about opportunism. It's more than that. It's a kind of a know-nothing denial that people want so much for everything to be cool, to be just be straightened out. And this is something that goes on here. We are a very prideful city. We ride bicycles. We're really cool. But meanwhile, a major employer and many minor employers are putting toxins into the air and into the ground and into the water. And as far as I can tell, it's all being kind of, swept into the river?
Swept under the rug, into the river, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah. So what happens next? What are you going to do next about this?
Other than go to Hawaii?
Well, I got some bad news about Hawaii.
Well, yeah, there is. That's why I go there. That's...
Yeah.
So there is another aspect of this story that I have not reported yet, and I intend to. This company has a very checkered history of handling hazardous waste. Going back to the 1980s, they have been cited, inspected, and cited for violations time and again for violating the regulations for handling this hazardous material that they have. They are considered a large quantity generator, it's a legal term, of hazardous waste. They have a lot of hazardous stuff on their site. And they don't handle it according to the rules. There are very specific rules that tell them how they must handle the stuff in a safe way, both for the environment and for the worker.
Now, you indicate in your article that they actually lied about what they were doing in dumping the stuff into the sewer system?
I don't think I used the word lie, but let me tell you what happened. So they told me in a statement they do not use arsenic and cadmium in their process, in their industrial process. And then the DEQ, or the City of Portland BES, Bureau of Environmental Services, found arsenic and cadmium in the sediment in Johnson Creek. Wow. How did that get there? I don't think cattails make arsenic or cadmium.
No, not likely.
Ducks, maybe.
Duck beavers, poop? You think it's all the fault of duck poop?
Beavers, for sure.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's important to understand the underlying principle here is, and this is me, this is not you, I'm not going to get you in trouble here, but I'm going to say this. When it's possible to lie, cheat, and steal to make money, you will find large corporations and even small ones engaging in those activities.
I think they spend a lot of time, a lot of effort on PR and maybe not so much on actual cleanup and being responsible.
So what is to be done? How do we as citizens deal with all this?
Well, I personally like the idea of setting up a regional environmental agency that could take over whatever the DEQ is supposed to do and do it right.
And its sole function would be to really deal with pollution.
Pollution, both air and water.
I find all of this very disturbing. I have family, young kids. I mean, all of this suggests to me that we live in a kind of complacency, a pridefulness around environment, our notions of environmental health, while at the same time, in fact, the region becomes ever more toxic. Am I wrong?
I think the region is just as toxic as it has always been. And the problem is that we haven't been informed. There's not a lot of transparency.
Okay, do we have other callers? All right, 231-8187. Barth, is it?
It's Barth. Good morning.
Barth, good morning.
Couple of things. You were talking about the tendency of corporations and businesses to lie, et cetera, to cover up their deeds that might be questionable.
Well, you know how you can tell when a corporation's lying. You know that, right?
It's like the lawyer joke, yes.
Yes.
Their lips are moving.
Yes.
Okay. I think more basically that what they're attempting to do as a attitude and a belief structure is that it is important to defer costs from internal to external. If you don't have to call the toxic waste people to pay them a lot of money to haul this stuff away, then your bottom line looks better. If you don't have to mitigate pollution of any sort going up your chimney or out your drain pipe or being swept off your parking lot, then your bottom line goes up and everybody else's consequences are improved. Your bottom line goes down. But and this is kind of the Republican model. They're not the only ones, but let's cut out regulation of all sorts because this encumbers business and it makes a climate that keeps the wealthy from being wealthier and costs in increased benefits needed by regular citizens to overcome these things which they should not have been exposed to in the first place. So that's my response to that. Also, just in terms of today, the Port of Vancouver, according to the Columbia River Keepers website, and they were on KBOO yesterday, I believe, talking about this, the Port of Vancouver is having a hearing about the oil leases from Tesoro, because when they originally wrote the lease, they said you have to have all of your permits done by X date, which is coming up here pretty soon, and you have to start construction soon after that date. That's in the original lease. And Tesoro is coming back and saying, oh, this is complicated, and we haven't been getting good cooperation with the state, and this is much more expensive, and they want to extend the lease terms and change the lease terms to allow them to continue working on the oil transfer terminal, which would be the largest one, certainly on the West Coast, if not the whole country. Now, there are public hearings. They're going to be on the Clark County Clark College in Glazer Hall.
Okay, finish real quick.
Sure. Well, that's happening today. It started at 9 o'clock, and it's going to 9 tonight. That information is on the Columbia River Keepers website, and there's also a way you can respond on the website. If you don't have time to go to the hearing, you can make a message to legislators or to the port officials. Very important. And thank your guest for his work, and perhaps the person, Matt, who called in before as a worker having contributed to this pollution at Precision Cast Parts, maybe that should be somebody you should track down and get some actual statements out of, and perhaps some depositions. Just a thought. Thanks again.
No,
it's off the air.
I think you're making a good point. Again, folks, if you're a little confused, we're talking about the bomb, what I call the oil bomb trains, which are planned to move oil that is particularly flammable, particularly explosive, out of the Midwest, out of the Rocky Mountain area, and move it, Bakken is it called, and move it over here. And then transship it into the world to be used by countries like China and others. This in the middle of a time when we're trying rationally to decrease the use of fossil fuels. The ironies here are enormous, and the temptations by local governments to get tax money out of all this are also enormous. And I want to go back to you, Paul. Paul Carver, if you just tuning in, folks. We're talking about the Precision Cast Parts Company and others who dump enormous amounts of toxins into the environment while being in that famous river, the Nile. So what is to be done? What do we do?
Well, there's still a mess there that needs to be cleaned up. The river, the creek, Johnson Creek, which we're again, where there's a park where kids play, it's still contaminated. And the DEQ is in the process of trying to figure out what's there, and they haven't held a public hearing. They haven't contacted the public to inform them, to give them a chance to comment. But we still need to clean that up.
Obviously. I have a request. The person, Matt, who called us, if you would, call into my producer. And we need your contact information for another show. We're really going to be on top of this. So that would be very, very helpful. And by the way, Paul, you're going to be on another one of our news shows on, is it tomorrow?
Lisa Loving's show, I think tonight.
Yes, tonight. And
at
I
5.
And I think that's very important. I also want to give kind of a shout out to Lisa. I think our news reporting is excellent and certainly under attentioned by the city of Portland, by the people of Portland. So you're going to be on the air again.
One more time.
You're turning into a radio junkie, man.
There's a lot of interest in this issue.
And there should be. I'm glad to
help.
I find it terrifying because I don't sense, in the current political climate here in Oregon, where we regard ourselves as an enlightened liberal environmentalist, I don't find any realistic understanding by the general public or the agencies of the danger that continues to exist in our environment. I mean, we've known for a long, long time that in the production of nuclear weapons, Hanford produced an enormous amount of radioactive toxins. We know some of those leak into the Columbia River. We know the river is regarded as very radioactive compared to what it ought to have been or ought to be. We know that toxins exist in the Willamette River. The general excuse for that was, well, it was war production. We know that all these things are going on, and we know that there is not enough money to make these cleanups happen. We also know that the agencies are either silent or in denial, and we know that the general news reporting, if you look at television news, which is kind of an oxymoron, the television news doesn't do anything about it, except maybe occasionally have a pretty story about happy dogs or some damn thing. I really am very concerned, and I really think that we all need to pay more attention, because this is the real thing. It's beyond, by the way, issues of capitalism itself. For example, the old Soviet Union, with no attention, dumped all of its nuclear waste that it could into the Arctic. You know, that went on for years. I don't know whether Russia does that anymore. I have no way of knowing that, and I'm sure there's not many people who do know, perhaps the CIA, but they ain't telling. We know that this kind of behavior is common throughout the world, and we also know that it is, and this is really important, common right here in the Portland metro area.
Cleaning up the environment is a cost of doing business, and someone is going to have to pay that cost.
Yeah, probably it'll be children with three heads or some damn thing.
Or frogs with four wings.
Yeah, really.
But the companies, if they don't pay for it, then the bill will come to you and me.
Well, and I think this is so, you know, so very crucial to our real understanding of the world in which we live. It ain't all cool. Things aren't really being taken care of. And it's all being papered over with good thoughts and bikeways. I mean, I'm becoming more and more cynical about the way in which the city approaches issues of the environment. Yes, it's better to not to use cars. Yes, bikeways are a good idea. Yes, public transportation, electric transport and so on are excellent things. But unless we get to these basic toxins and clean them up and end the production of them, it's all for naught.
We can't just pretend by riding our bike that we've done our recycling, that we've done our duty.
Really?
We have to get active politically and demand that these messes, these toxic messes, get cleaned up and addressed.
And you mentioned earlier, but it's really important to notice that people in the Southeast, parts of Portland and in the county, and Clackamas County, are rising up. Demanding a cleanup, demanding an improvement in the situation, whether they will develop a powerful enough constituency, whether they can really force the issue, remains to be seen. Again, we've talked about how the DEQ is a conflicted agency with constant cuts in its budget. We have to realize we absolutely have to realize that this is a crisis that has been kind of papered over and that will make our lives more horrible.
One of the issues that gets a little less attention than it deserves is the pollution of the groundwater. This company, Precision Castparts, has historically dumped carcinogenic solvents into the ground. That's got into the aquifer. The city of Milwaukee uses the groundwater there, about a mile away from this plant, for its well water, drinking well water.
Oh.
And their water is contaminated, and not by this source, but by another corporate polluter. But this company has contaminated the groundwater, and that groundwater cannot be used for drinking.
You know, this is like for example, the Ogallala Aquifer, where if it weren't for citizen action, there was a plan to build this huge pipeline right over that, where any leak would pollute that water, and already, because of groundwater issues, it faces some pollution. The fact is that it is difficult and expensive to keep the groundwater clean, and that's not happening because it's expensive, and the bottom line is what everything is about, for corporations anyway. So what are you planning to do next? Where are you going to be looking? Are you going to continue with this kind of work?
Well, as I mentioned, I'm going to Hawaii for another assignment on...
Oh, you weren't kidding.
I'm not kidding. I'm working on pesticides and GMOs, and they're kind of one and the same. The large GMO companies are basically pesticide companies. They make GMOs that work with pesticides, and their main business is selling chemicals that pollute the environment. And then these GMOs come along right behind them, and they make another fortune.
So what you're saying, and it's something that doesn't surprise me, but it's very clear, is that huge money-based corporations are willingly, perhaps even knowingly, polluting our environment, poisoning our food, poisoning our air, poisoning our water. And most of us, if we understand that, feel helpless and angry. So what probably needs to happen is we really need a major movement on these kinds of issues. I don't see it happening at the national level. I mean, I see the contest for the presidency on the Republican side is irrelevant anyway. But I see on the Democratic side two candidates who essentially are fighting, but not, as far as I can tell, really addressing these terribly serious problems.
Well, they're certainly not. If you look at the Republican side, I know the Democrats, Bernie is definitely all about cleaning up the environment and protecting against these kinds of abuses.
This is a very, very important issue. Again, I want to tell people that tonight it's 5:00 on Lisa Loving's news show.
Yes.
You're going to be on there again talking about these issues. There, you can't cover this too much. You can't pay too much attention to the potential destruction of the environment, which in turn means the destruction not just of all the other animals, but humans as well. Those of us with young children, those of us who are planning to have children, this is really serious stuff. And one of the ironies of it is you don't know most of the time right away. Reduction in the longevity, the lack of overall health, all these things are very, very real, but not in the immediate sense very, very obvious. Very rarely an Aaron Brockovich or like you, somebody uncovers this stuff. And it's you're tearing off the lid on all this stuff, but how long does that attention get focused? What does the general media do about it? They have a cute story, as I say, about doggies. I like doggies.
Who doesn't like doggies?
I like doggies. Doggies are cute, yeah, but they're pretty damned irrelevant when you consider the possibility that our children and our children's children are being poisoned. Do we have any other calls? Let's take a couple of calls. Noah, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm an organizer with Portland Rising Tide, and I was actually trying to encapsulate what I think both of you have, that what's been going on with the environmental movement, the way that we perceive it, is that we kind of have the same broken windows theory being applied. Because we've been able to do stuff about particulate matter, because PPM of 0.10, 2.5 has been removed. We don't see the problem anymore, so we think it's gone away. But the root issues of what causes pollution still exist. And it's the same kind of like false solution that we've been stuck down our throats when you look at cities like New York, where they say, well, we don't actually need to solve the root causes of crime, which is, you know, endemic disparity. We actually just need to get rid of graffiti and polish the windows and arrest as many people of color as we can. And in the same way, this kind of broken windows theory on environment also mostly affects people of color and poor people. And I think that's, and it kind of goes into the whole, like, all we need to do is bike, you know, reuse our bottled water. And, like, it just, it's so detached from what's actually coming out of the pipes and the smokestacks of local companies. I also just want to make a shout out to, in May, the week of May 14th, up in Anacortes, 350.org, Rising Tide, a whole bunch of other groups that I'm sorry that I'm not naming right now, are going to be trying to shut down the, sorry, not shut down, but we're going to protest the Anacortes oil refinery.
Which is the biggest one on the coast, isn't it?
Biggest one on the coast, about 53%, I think, of all gasoline in the Northwest comes from that location. It's also one of the most pristine environments we have. That's oil, that's whale watching area. There's a lot of tribal land in that area. And this is, at this point, it looks like it's going to be mostly a tribal-led march and rally. If people are interested, they can learn more about breakfree.org. And then specifically, breakfree, I think it's this, PNY, PacificNorthwest.org.
Okay, say that address, that email address again.
Sure, that was breakfreepny, breakfreepacificnorthwest.org. And if that doesn't come up, I just recommend people search it in Google.
That'll work. Good for Google. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. I
absolutely, and thanks for talking about the subject.
Oh, yeah, that's what we do. And I guess we should give a shout-out to our own station. KBOO is the only radio station really dealing with these kinds of issues. And it's too bad. It's really too bad. But we'll keep doing it.
I want to highlight one of the things that this caller just mentioned, that the environmental justice angle of this story is really, really important. These effects fall disproportionately on low-income people of color in these neighborhoods. We're not talking about Lake Oswego being polluted. If this plant was in Lake Oswego, it would have been shut down a long time ago, or there would have been drastic changes. But because we have a neighborhood that's of lower income people, you know, who cares?
You know, I think that's really true, and I think it's an important point. When you begin to examine pollution and the phenomenon of this kind of general pollution and the large corporations' role, you begin to discover, once again, that it is a class and race-based discrimination. So that's an important aspect of it, and we all should be aware of it. I think we try to take another caller. Paul.
Yeah, hi. This is your fellow talk show host, Paul Rowland.
Oh, hi, Paul.
There's a really important aspect that I felt compelled to call in on. I think, Paul, you spoke about it perhaps in an interview on X-Ray. It's really galling to me that the city has spent so much energy into bringing back salmon into Johnson Creek and this whole, attention to the greenways and everything. I think it's honest. All that effort is important and honest, but it almost strikes me as almost like a greenwashing. It's like at the same time, there's the bed of the creek is full of all these toxic metals. It's incredible.
What I found galling about this entire episode in that regard is that so much money has gone into restoring that watershed through the Johnson Creek Watershed Council and the Oregon Lottery Funds. And at the same time, this company is dumping toxic pollution into the creek. And there's been no communication back and forth between the people who are trying to clean it up and the people who are polluting it.
So the left and the right hand again.
Yeah, yes, really. Exactly. Thanks right. for the call, Paul.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you know, this is so important. I'm sure I'll be, and I'm sure Abe and I both will be covering this in the future. And I Paul, I really appreciate your work. You know, both you and I, you in a really professional way, me as a more casual reporter, had worked for the Oregonian when it was a newspaper, an actual reporting body. Now, it was not a great paper. It was not a big exposer of corporate crime, but it existed.
And we had our moments. We did have our moments.
And there were moments. And I think that, again, what's so important to me, and I want to give a shout-out to the Portland Tribune, which amazingly has been doing some wonderful work, and you, Paul Culberstein, have been doing great work. And I want to remind people that you're going to be talking with Lisa Loving tonight at 5 o'clock on KBOO. So all you, stay tuned. And remember, this is the best in news and public affairs and music.
It's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a founding sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival. The 29th annual festival will be held this year from July 1st through 4th at Tom McCall Waterfront Park in Portland. Festival passes are on sale now, including the Blues Buddy Pass and the basic 4-day pass at early bird prices. More information about the passes, the festival, and more can be found at kboo.fm/WBF. 2016.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, physicist, scholar, and social activist Vandana Shiva speaks on We Are All Seeds. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, Lori Wallach from Public Citizens Global Trade Watch and Robert Perry from Consortium News discuss the information revealed in the Panama Papers document leak. At 11, Stage and Studio focuses on Milagro Theater's Into the Beautiful North and Theater Vertigo's Love and